And Americans for the Arts.
Welcome to Midpoint, Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today we'll hear more about a bill passed by the Florida Senate. It would require local governments and police agencies to cooperate with federal authorities who enforce immigration law. And we'll take your calls. If you'd like to call in, I'm starting to put people in the queue right now. The number is 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. But first, I want to bring you a comment that was left by a listener about one of my shows last week. In that show, we talked about another bill in the Florida legislature. This one would let teachers carry firearms in the classroom. And Rob talked about that last hour as well. A caller weighed in on how, so this listener is going to comment on teachers carrying firearms in the classroom and about how one of the callers that weighed in on how prisons perpetuate slavery. So here's what one listener had to say about that show.
Stephen in St. Pete, I was just listening to the show, and I wanted to comment on two points. The issue about teachers carrying guns in the classroom, think of the worst possible scenario that could possibly happen. I mean, this is a nightmare waiting to happen. Let's say a teacher wakes up one Monday morning, and he's hungover, and he gets into it with a couple of students, and he feels threatened, and teachers shooting students, and then they claim stand your ground. Think of that. You don't cure a gun problem with more guns. It's never happened in the history of the world. Never. The other thing I wanted to comment on, the one fellow brought up a really good point about peonage. The only mistake that Abraham Lincoln made when he became president was choosing Andrew Johnson as his running mate. This guy was a unionist, but he was also a white supremacist, and he was pro-Confederacy, even though he didn't want to break away from the Union. And when Reconstruction happened and Andrew Johnson took over after Lincoln was assassinated, a lot of the prisons in the South were privately owned, so they used a peonage system. And what this system did, you could arrest any free black man for loitering or any trumped-up charge. He couldn't pay the fine. He'd get sent to prison, and then the prison owners would rent them out to the old slave masters that got all their land back. And that's what peonage was, and the one fellow was talking about it. And like I said, the issue with slavery and slave labor and the rise of unions was combating this in the North. But today we still have slave labor and slavery going on in the United States of America. And the guy was right. It still goes on today. Doesn't matter if you're white, black, whoever. It's happening still in the United States of America.
Well, that was one listener commenting about last week's show, which is on our website, WMNF.org. Later on in the broadcast, I'm going to give out the number for you to leave a voicemail about today's show. And you can always listen to previous shows and comment on the stories on our website, WMNF.org. Or you can join us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WMNF News. And before we begin the show, I want to thank the tip jar donation that just came in for the show True Talk. It's a $250 donation from Jose Lacal in Boynton Beach. So thank you so much for that generous donation to Community Radio 88.5 FM. Well, I'm going to read here from the AP about what happened Friday in the Florida Senate. One of the many things that happened, local governments and police agencies would have to cooperate with federal authorities who enforce immigration law under a bill that was passed by the Florida Senate. The bill passed on a 22-18 vote on Friday, and it would ban what are known as sanctuary policies. Senator Anatoly Flores of Miami was the only Republican to vote against the bill. Democrats called the legislation mean-spirited, while Republican Senator Joe Gruters said it only targets the worst of the worst and would only affect immigrants who've been arrested and are the subject of a federal detainer. And we will hear from Gruters in this hour. The vote came the day after the state house passed a similar bill. Several differences need to be worked out before the legislation can go to Republican Governor Ron DeSantis. Among the differences are penalties for violating the policy. The House includes fines for officials who adopt sanctuary policies. The Senate version does not. DeSantis supports a sanctuary policy ban. And here's more information from the Miami Herald, which writes, under this bill, local law enforcement would be required to honor federal law enforcement's requests for what are called an immigration detainer, meaning a request that another law enforcement agency detain a person based on probable cause to believe that the person is a removable alien under federal immigration law. Of course, that's the terms, the technical terms in the law. A removable alien. The bill would essentially make the request a requirement. In the middle of the bill hearing process, a report by the American Civil Liberties Union showed that federal immigration authorities had asked Miami-Dade County to hold at county jails hundreds of people who are listed as U.S. citizens. The group cited data provided in a lawsuit filed by a U.S. citizen. His name is Garland Creedle. He was wrongly held for deportation after spending a night in a Miami-Dade jail in March 2017. Amid the news items on Grutter's and the bill, arguments erupted into protests at the Capitol, sit-ins at lawmakers' district offices, and even an ACLU-issued travel warning for travelers and non-citizens to stay away from Florida. So this is all some background information about what we're going to hear about this hour, and I would like to take your calls. What do you think about this sanctuary cities ban by the Florida legislature? It hasn't passed yet, but it's a very close. It's passed both houses, and they're working it out. 813-239-9663, DJ at WMNF.org, or 813, you can text 813-433-0885 and let us know whether you support the sanctuary city ban and why you do or don't support it. So let's hear some extended excerpts from Friday's debate that happened in the state Senate. And I want to thank the Florida Channel for letting us use this audio. I'm going to link to their full video on our website. Here's Senator Annette Tadeo. She's a Democrat from Miami-Dade County. And before, we're going to hear what she has to say, but before, I'm not going to play the part right before this where she was talking about her Italian and her Jewish heritage. Here's Democrat Annette Tadeo.
When this bill was first presented, the sponsor claimed, as we have heard from lots of people, that this bill will only apply to violent lawbreakers. And obviously, there's a great deal of difference between those of us who understand and have read the bill and the sponsor and others. However, as a response to one of my questions in committee and what we have heard on the floor, the bill sponsor confirmed that the bill applies to non-violent offenders, because I specifically asked about what would happen if you had a broken taillight or you were jaywalking. I've had a broken taillight. I've been stopped. I don't think I'm a criminal. This bill has no exception for those seeking to escape Venezuela and other violent countries and repressive regimes. I also asked several questions to the sponsor of the bill, both in committee and on the floor, about how probable cause is defined. From reading this bill, there is no clear answer in the bill, and we were not provided a clear answer from the sponsor. I also asked about the definition of best efforts standard as mandated for law enforcement. There is no clear answer in the bill, and we were not provided a clear answer from the sponsor. I also asked about the cost of this bill. I asked who will be paying the cost of housing detained persons who are the subject of this act. The sponsor admitted on the floor that this bill will not be 100% paid for by the federal government, that the federal government has their own rates, and that our local governments have to live by those reimbursement rates. In my opinion, that answer, and if that is the case, this means that this is an unfunded mandate, which will place the cost of enforcing this bill on the taxpayers, on Floridians, and the people I represent. In my opinion, this means that this bill is a tax on Floridians, which pursuant to the recent constitutional amendment in Florida, requires a two-third vote in order to pass. You know, the bill sponsors, who, by the way, I've developed a relationship with, and I'm happy to be working with him on many issues, just like I've developed a relationship with so many of you. And President Pro Tempore is right. We all have great respect for each other. And I like that. I like that we in the upper chamber do that. But it is hurtful to hear things like only people who will be impacted by the proposed law are bad, criminal, illegal aliens. Those are very hurtful words. And that's when I get emotional. Because these are people. These are the people that are keeping our engine of our state going. These are the hardworking people. When you are an immigrant, and when you are an immigrant who has to work three times as hard because you don't have papers, chances are you're working long hours. You're doing everything you can to stay out of trouble. And I know we keep hearing it doesn't affect, but, you know, dangerous criminals. But again, we haven't defined that. And, you know, one of the senators asked me the other day, why is this such a big deal to you? Because in my community, it causes so much angst, so much pain, so much fear. Fear. When my own 12-year-old daughter comes home and asks me, if her friend that she met at karate, she didn't know that he was born in the United States, but she didn't know that his mother was undocumented. I didn't know that his mother was undocumented. But of course, once they find out that you're elected, they start asking questions. And that's how I found out. But it was my daughter who said to me, Mommy, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that one day he will come home from school and his mom will not be there. She will have been detained. She cleans houses for a living. That's what she does. And my daughter asked me if we would take him under our wing were that to happen. That was the hardest question you can get. I've gotten lots of hard questions, and you guys know my daughter, she's tough. But to be 12 years old and realize that your friend may not have their mom one day when they come home from school, you know how often that happens in our community? All the time. All the time. And then those kids, guess what? They come under our wing. Because all of a sudden, those American citizen kids are our responsibility. Think about those kids and who we're raising when we do that, separated from their families. Now, I want to talk just a little bit about some data, because I like data. Miami-Dade, Hillsborough, and Escambia. Jail records in three counties, those three counties were analyzed for the claim that arrest requests sent by ICE to these counties, so-called ICE detainers, primarily targeted people with serious offenses. And what has been found is that since 2017, less than one-third of the people ICE asked Miami-Dade to arrest for deportation were being charged with what Florida law considers dangerous crimes. The others included numerous U.S. citizens who were falsely detained for ICE after a mere arrest. mostly on low-level charges. We are now having to spend money in some of those cases to defend those wrongful arrests. In Hillsborough and Escambia, driver's license violations, traffic charges, and civil offenses accounted for the majority of the arrests. Living in Florida, where 4 in 5 people drive themselves to work every day, but where proof of citizenship or lawful immigration status is required to obtain a driver's license, again, this is why I take up that challenge. Let's give them driver's license.
Well, that's Senator Annette Tadeo. She's a Democrat from Miami-Dade County. That's about half of what she said on the Senate floor on Friday. And we might hear the other half in a little bit, or we might move on to hear from a Republican next. But you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. My name is Sean Canaan. This is Midpoint Monday at 12:21 in the afternoon on 88.5. And we're talking about the Sanctuary City bill that passed the Florida Senate on Friday. A similar bill, not exactly the same, passed the House earlier last week. And now they're going to try to work out the differences. And it would essentially ban what are called sanctuary cities. You're hearing a lot more detail than that shorthand, where it has to do with immigration detainers and whether local governments can say that they're not going to cooperate with ICE regarding these detainers and putting people in jail and holding them, I guess, in jail when they just have immigration violations if they have committed a crime. And as you heard Senator Tadeo saying there, that a third of them are violent crimes and the majority are nonviolent. So that was Senator Annette Tadeo, and we're going to go to the phones now. And if you'd like to call in, the number is 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org, text 813-433-0885. And we have Tony that wants to talk about his opinions about this this idea to ban what are called sanctuary cities. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Okay, nice topic. First, I'm the son of a Cuban immigrant. He came in 59 before the wet foot, dry foot thing was available. So my dad came in. My uncle had to guarantee him a job. He wouldn't be a burden on the community, all that good stuff. Now, I started the construction industry in 1980. After I started the construction industry, there were whites primarily in the supervisory roles and leadership roles. Then there are blacks that did a lot of the labor work, but there was basically like 50-50 mixed on the job sites. After the amnesty of 86, you could not find a black person on the job site after 1993. And I've worked all over the United States. That's the truth. So that's why I'm anti the illegal immigration. But the lady's facts just now, she said, oh, if only a third of the people. Well, if 100,000 people come to Florida and basically 1/3 of them, she's saying, of the arrests are bad, that's 33,000 people.
No, she's that number, the third number.
Of the people arrested, yeah.
Yeah, so the people in the jails that were subject to this immigration detainer, a third of them were for violent crimes, and the 2/3 were for nonviolent crimes.
And yeah, and I understand that, of course, not every single one of them was of the ones that come here undocumented or illegal are arrested. But I look at it from my knowledge of the construction industry, how it really fathers that left the construction industry, their kids didn't follow the trade because, of course, contractors are going to hire people that will work for less money. And it has, and I'm white as the driven snow when you look at me. But the fact is, it has decimated the African American community and jobs that they really held, even though they weren't given leadership roles. And those are wrongs and terrible things. But the fact is, you had almost 50% of the employment group in construction were African Americans. And that's how I look at it. But, I feel bad for the people that they come from a place that, you know, doesn't offer opportunity and all that stuff. And that's how, you know, I won the birth lottery. I think you did too. And being born in the United States is true, but that doesn't mean that we should let other people that were born here, people that are native born Americans, get jammed up because somebody's coming in and taking the job for less money, and I'll listen to you on the radio.
All right. Thanks for that call, Tony, and I just want to respond. Sorry that you're, if you're still around, okay, you did drop off, as you said you were going to, but, you know, you describe a problem, and to me, the problem you're describing isn't an immigration problem or a migration problem. It sounds to me like it's a problem with bosses trying to undercut their employees by paying them less and less and less. And that is a problem that you're describing. And I can understand how that would be a frustrating problem if you're in that industry and that you can't work in that industry anymore because the wages are so low. That's a problem. And how do you address that problem? It doesn't sound to me like an immigration question or a problem with a solution that has to do with immigration. It sounds like a problem where the bosses are greedy, or I don't know if greedy is the exact right word, but are successfully undercutting their employees by lowering their wages. And so that to me is what the problem you're describing. So sorry you had to drop off to before you could respond to that, but thank you for that. I'm glad you called in, Tony. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join this conversation, let's hear what Timothy in Tampa has to say. Hi, Timothy.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, I'm good. Thanks for calling in.
Long time listener, first time caller. What everybody seems to fail to realize here is that the people are here illegal. You want to give these illegal aliens more benefits and better treatment than you want to give a natural-born American.
What benefits are you talking about? I listened to Annette Tadeo talk for 6 minutes, and she didn't say anything about giving anyone benefits.
Listen, I think that the mayor of every so-called sanctuary city, the governor, needs to go in there and arrest them. It's not a question about letting them. They're here. They're here illegally.
Actually, that's not true. Turn down for a second. So about, gosh, it must have been about 10 years ago, I was at a conference. I was covering a conference about immigration at a law school in town. And there was someone there from the George W. Bush Department of Homeland Security. And he was an immigration attorney for DHS. And he said that term, illegal, they're here illegally, or illegal immigrants, does not apply to most people, because most people, what they do is they legally get a visa, and then they overstay their visa, which is not, you're not breaking any law. So, don't use that term, because it doesn't apply.
So when my driver's license runs out, I'm not breaking a law?
If you drive, you are.
A visa is a license to be in the United States for a specific period of time for a specific purpose, whether it be vacation, school, work, whatever. When that visa's up, you've got to go. You've got to go, or you need to do the proper thing to get it extended. If you don't, you're wrong. If they send you back home, they're not wrong for sending you back home. I don't care if you've got a child over here or what. If we go on vacation to Germany and I have a child over there, that child's not a German. That child's a freaking American. So just because they have a child over here, why do they get to stay? What makes the child an American just because of the piece of ground they're born on?
Well, now you're getting into a whole other thing that we weren't even talking about, but I think it does. I think that the U.S. Constitution says that people who are here are, if you're born in the U.S., I don't think there's any question that you're an American citizen.
If your parents are an American, you're an American. If your parents are Guatemalan, you're Guatemalan, buddy. You know what I'm saying?
I guess, it sounds like you're making stuff up as you go along, but...
Sanctuary city mayors should be arrested by the federal government for treason. There should be no way in hell that a piece of America could be called even sanctuary city.
Well, okay, thank you for that call, Timothy. I don't know if the word sanctuary has a negative connotation, which it makes. I think you're making it out to sound like a negative thing, that nowhere in America can be called a sanctuary. I think that a lot of places of worship are considered sanctuaries. But I guess we're getting off the topic, so I appreciate you calling in, Timothy, and I want to give other people a chance to weigh in. And I do want to go to some of the other, especially the Republican people who are senators who are talking on the Senate floor on Friday. But we do have some phone lines lit, so I do want to move on. Thanks for that call, Timothy. And I don't think there are any women on the line. So if you're a woman and you'd like to call in at 813-239-9663, I will give you priority. But let's go right now to Alex in Gibsonton. Hi, Alex.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Hold on, let me turn this down. I'm a Mexican American, born in the United States. My mother is born in the United States also. I mean, my family goes back 300 years of being Yaqui Indian, which it's the same thing, depends on which side of the border you're on. When they drew that line, you either were Native American or you became a Mexican.
I'm going to pause you for just a second. You have a thought that you want to get out, and I want to let you get that out, but that's something that's always confused me. Whether you were born on one side of the line or the other side of the line, either way, you're a Native American, right?
Yes, but here's comes the tricky part. When as we're children, a lot of us were living in, sometimes in there, the people were living in shacks in orange groves, stuff like that, you know, back in the 60s, the 50s and 60s, a lot of poverty. The local government thought it was better to remove some of the children for their own good and place them with other families that are a little better off. When I was born, they put on my birth certificate, they wouldn't even put Latino or nothing like that. They put white. And I am brown, like a Hershey's Kiss, you know, and my birth certificate says white. That's not weird. Since the Yaqui Indians did not go to reservation, I'm not entitled to anything. So, going to the sanctuary cities, I believe, you know, like the lady was talking about, you know, the minor crimes, then being held and being sent back. I've seen these families get torn apart personally. As a little kid, I used to work in the tomato fields, pick oranges, all of that labor work, man, very hard labor work. These guys, going to the guy that's talking about the construction work, I'm in construction right now. I see these guys putting up houses. They're not taking their jobs. They're giving the jobs by these developers because their work is top notch. And when it comes to these Mexicans or Guatemalans or wherever they're Central and South Americans, they're given the jobs because they are fast. And they're getting the job done. They're not underbidding anybody. They just got tired of having to work for an American that is underpaying them. So they cut out the middleman and learn the trade and they know how to bid them. They're not. I talk to these guys every day. They are getting paid top dollar, but because of the quality of work. Now I've seen where there's a Anglo crew and a Latino crew. The Anglo crew will build half of a house out of concrete, and the Latino crew will knock out two or three of them. You know, they're getting paid good money. And the one thing is, man, is that you have. What is it that you have a person that comes to the United States undocumented, doesn't speak English, has a zero education, you know, other than what they learn on the farm, maybe third grade. And how is it that they're taking these people's jobs that have all the opportunity here in the United States to go and get school, financial aid, and all of these other things that are just handed to them and they don't take advantage of? That, man, it's just mind-boggling, man. I see this stuff all the time. And when it comes to these Latinos and these immigrants, the reason why they got money is because they don't have the expenses that an Anglo person would. They don't want the house in the suburbs. They don't want the brand-new car, the hunting club, you know, the wife getting the nails done every day. They have very little expenses. They're fine with what they have. You know, and they don't have all that money that they're spending useless on all material things.
Well, Alex, I thank you for those thoughts. I'm going to try to move on to other people. I've got other people on the line. I thank you for those, you know, what your thoughts are on that. I'm not sure that necessarily, you know, people from different cultures have different completely different lifestyles like you're describing, but I appreciate your perspective as somebody who worked in the fields and someone who worked in construction or has seen that and has also seen families torn apart. So thank you for calling in, Alex. Thanks for that. And we're going to go now to Rita in Lake Wales. Thanks so much for calling in, Rita. What would you like to say?
I have had lots of people work at my house who were from outside of the country, both illegal and ones who are undocumented. And I tell you what, they're the hardest working people that I've ever had. I mean, Americans, white, black, you know, they don't seem to want to do, in my county, the roofing, the grove work. They just, it's offered, they need people, they're constantly advertising that they need people, and they just, you know, are not interested because it's hot, it's long hours, it's really difficult. And the people I've talked to personally, I mean, I know a lot of them personally who, you know, they told me they're worried if they're undocumented, they got to go to Orlando for their next immigration meeting, and they don't know if they're going to be taken to the airport, and, you know, some of them own their own home, they have cars, and a lot of times they're victims of crime because their employers don't pay them and they're not going to call the police and they have bad experiences. And anyway, I just, if my family was in danger of gangs, I would get out of that country and do whatever I needed to protect my family. So I don't know why. I mean, there's room for all of us is how I feel.
All right, Rita, thank you so much for that perspective. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call in is 813-239-9663. Hopefully, I'm going to bring it in a little bit more specifically to this Sanctuary Cities bill that passed the Florida Senate on Friday, and we're going to go back to hear some more in just a minute. But you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. This is Midpoint Monday at 12:37 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan, and we're listening to the Senate debate on a bill they passed about sanctuary cities and banning them essentially in Florida. I know all that's shorthand. And I do have some people on the line, Frank, Kevin, Emmanuel. Hang on, please, because we are going to get to you in just a moment. But let me play, we already heard Senator Annette Tadeo. She was a Democrat who opposed the bill. So I want to hear from someone who supported the bill. And this is Republican Tom Lee. He represents parts of Hillsborough County. Let's hear why he supports this bill about banning sanctuary cities in Florida. Here's Tom Lee.
I had filed a couple of amendments here on third reading, and I want to tell you how much respect I have for the prerogative of the chair to ignore those amendments when we are in debate. It is certainly their prerogative. And I know it's an unusual practice, but some of these things that we deal with down here on the floor on occasion are really a matter of conscience. And honestly, I have a tendency to see the world in black and white. I don't see a lot of gray, and I'm a sort of an unnatural ally of people that are concerned about the implications of this bill, because I truly do believe in comprehensive immigration reform. I think we're a nation of laws, and I think allowing porous borders that have people coming over here in defiance of our laws is somewhat of an abomination to all the people who have come before them legally. But then a couple things happen. And first, I come down here on the floor, and probably for the first time, or certainly more so than ever, I feel like I'm flipping the channels on the TV set at night between MSNBC and Fox News. And I hear two different worlds talk about the same day in American history, and I wonder if they were on the same planet. And that's what I heard yesterday. And then we accepted amendments that I didn't really understand the need for if the bill was really narrowly tailored. Then I heard, in the course of adopting one of those amendments, that we were after, quote, the worst of the worst. And so I filed an amendment to make sure we were really after the worst of the worst. But we're on third reading, and that's behind us. And so, you know, I'm conflicted. I really am. I feel like more than any of the things that bother me about this is there are a few people in this debate who don't bear some responsibility. There are people who don't believe we should have borders. They don't understand the concept to begin with. They bear some responsibility. And there's Washington, D.C., that has ignored this problem and let us rise to a level where we have, you know, 800,000 or 12 million nationally that are here in our country illegally. And little to nothing has been done. And now we have this problem that is a frustration to a lot of people, and it's not getting any better. But then we also have people here that are champions of this bill who have had time, opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to advance and support and demand that we have E-Verify, and they won't do it. And so we have selective indignation. And rather than cut off the draw to America, which is the job, we let that draw continue. And so they too have responsibility for where we sit today, because they won't take responsibility for passing public policy that will make it harder for people to get a job in this country when they come here. So there's a little bit of shame on everybody here. And the bill I have in front of me just wants to deal with one piece of it. And we have people in this state who are hard-working. They have come here well-intentioned to make a better life for their family. Unbeknownst to me, I know I have seen many of them on our job sites. I've seen them in our farms. And I think they add a great deal to our economy, and they're scared. And what I've been trying to figure out as we go through this whole debate, and as I've met with group after group of these folks, some of them with their children with them, and I'm sure you all have met with them too, is what do they have to be afraid of? Does this bill really only deal with the worst of the worst? Is this bill really designed to only touch or affect people who have a detention or a conviction? Or is this something that can, you know, lead to people not wanting to report crimes being subject to deportation because they're a victim of a crime? And I would really just impose a burden on our sponsor here as he closes on this bill, because, and I hope our colleagues in the House are listening, because they're going to get this back. And we have over a week left now, just barely over, but a little over a week. And there's plenty of time for them to work with the sponsor to deal with any infirmities that may exist in this bill and to clean up any confusion that may exist. Because I'm seeing it more and more in the politics of our society, where people come here detached from the reality of what is in the legislation. I've seen it on Amendment 4. I saw it on school security. There's plenty to debate about both, and there's plenty to debate here. But if we start the debate so far afield that's detached from any semblance of reality, we can't ever actually deal with the true core potential concerns about a piece of legislation between the hash marks. And so I would just ask Senator Gruters in his closing on this bill, you know, to lift that burden from people like myself here that are really very much on the fence here about whether or not we're just picking on somebody when we could be solving this problem globally or comprehensively. And because it's been hard, this one, as we've come down through the funnel here overnight, I haven't been involved in this. And we did a lot of work overnight to try to understand and reconcile everything that was said here yesterday. And I'm genuinely confused, Senator. So I would appreciate you cleaning that up for me if you can in your closing, sir. Thank you.
Well, that was Hillsborough County Republican Tom Lee speaking on the Senate floor on Friday, right before the vote on the Sanctuary City bill passed. And I'd like to know your thoughts. And we do have a lot of people on the line, so we're going to go to that in just a second. But I want to let you know you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa at 12:45 in the afternoon. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan, and we're going to go to the phones. Oh, actually, let me read an email or two first, because several of our emailers said something that Tom Lee pointed out, which is that these some of the emailers are using the word hypocrisy, that they want to cut down on the number of people coming in, but they won't, these Republican senators won't support E-Verify. So Jim, for example, says the right seems to hate immigrants, but on the other hand, they will not pass E-Verify, follow the money. So I guess what Jim and even maybe Senator Lee were getting at is E-Verify will check to see what a person's immigration status is so that employers know before they hire someone. And yet it sounds like there's a lot of speculation that employers really don't want to know. They want to be able to hire these people at subpar wages, at below market rates, and have this kind of, you know, this sort of Damocles hanging over them, so that if they complain about something, or if they, you know, want better wages, that they can just threaten to deport them, is kind of how I'm reading that that hypocrisy. All right, 813-239-9663 is the number to call in. Deborah in Lutz, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Hello?
Hi, Deborah. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Hey, great show. I'm glad that people are bringing up this issue of E-Verify. Because what we have here is the tail wagging the dog. More GOP fear-mongering to make people afraid of undocumented immigrants, when the ball really is in their court with employers. But we all know that the Republicans will not go after big business. Now, I'm a retired military officer, and I was stationed in Southern California for a while. And it was very common, if you were on Interstate 5 at any of the rest stops in Southern California, you'd see these luxury coaches, buses coming in, and you'd think, oh, who's the rock star? Because, you know, it's near Hollywood. And what you would see is that bus would pull up, and the most bedraggled, dirty, tired-looking, in bad shape immigrants were on that bus, and they'd let them out. And they'd have like a brown paper bag with all their earthly belongings in it. They'd go in to use the restrooms, and the bus would pull out. Not long after that, all the little white pickup trucks would come in to offer them jobs. Now, you know, this would be a very easy thing for law enforcement to take a look at. But this whole thing of punishing the people who are coming up here to do work that most Americans don't want to do is ridiculous. And I can remember our own Governor Rick Scott during his tenure saying why we can't use E-Verify, because all of a sudden, you know, the tomato growers and such were crying, oh my goodness, we can't pick our crops, they're all going to go to waste. So all these people that are calling in about being afraid of immigrants and whatever else, you really can do something about it, but you're going to have to vote for other people besides Republicans, because they're not going to go after businesses. So basically, that's what I had to say, and I'll get off here and listen to what others have to say. Thank you so much.
All right, Deborah, thanks so much for calling in, and thanks for being a female caller. And earlier I put out a call, and it still stands, that if you are a woman, I'll put you to the front of the line, because right now we have four men on hold, it seems like, and I would like to hear the perspective from women as well. To which I got a critical text from the 352 area code accusing me of gender bias. So I don't know, guilty? So thanks for that text from the 352 area code. Brett writes, but Mexican work is shoddy. You pay for them. I'm white and work my blank off. They drive wages down and let Rita pay for them. Put up a tent in your studio's parking lot and feed, house, educate, clothe, and etc. Give them medical. Your station is blind to the truth and is a one-way lie. So that's what Brett has to say out there in cyberspace. Apparently thinking that, I don't know. You heard what he said, or some of it. I had to censor myself in reading some of the kind of questionable language he was writing. But thanks for that email, Brett. If you'd like to email in, dj@wmnf.org. Who's been holding a long time? Emmanuel has been holding a while in St. Pete. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to salute a lot of these immigrants coming from Central America, because like many of your previous callers have said, you know, they're hardworking, family-oriented, and just trying to make a better life for themselves and their family. In contrast to the way that the Europeans came over here, or anybody who knows history, that they killed, stole the land, and basically committed genocide on this whole hemisphere. So just to put things into perspective, you know, these people, by and large, the vast majority of them are coming over here peacefully just to work and make an honest living, in contrast to the Europeans who came over here, tried to kill everybody and stole all the land. And that's it. That's my comment, plain and simple.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in, Emmanuel. And Frank is also on the line. Hi, Frank in Tampa.
How you doing? I kind of wanted to, there's a lot of stuff, and you said, where do you start? But the sanctuary cities, I hope you get someone in there to explain that these people are not coming over here illegally. They're not coming over here illegally. They can come into this country and seek asylum, and once the judge tell them yes, yeah, nay, at that point, they become illegal. I can count you 20 Europeans that I know that are living in this U.S. on this Gulf Coast, Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater, that are illegal from Canada and Eastern Europe. You never hear them say, round these people up and get them out of this country. That's what bothers me about that. Until when they start rounding up the Eastern Europeans and the Canadians, then they're going to say, oh, yeah, we need sanctuary cities.
We're not going to put a border on the Ontario-New York border, if there is one.
Exactly. 8 or 9 hijackers came through there. That's more of a threat than Guatemalans coming over here picking cantaloupe. So it's all about racism in this country. And you're right. They can stop this very quickly by getting on the businesses that are hiring these people. But we need sanctuary cities, because you're talking about rounding up people, throwing them in jail, and they're coming over here legally. Until they change the Constitution and all these other the laws of our country, these people are coming here legal. I mean, legal. So I think someone needs to come on and explain to these people, like Timothy, who called, like they're getting all these benefits and they're getting all this. And that's just all total myth.
And my engineer here pointed out to me that there is one group of immigrants who have gotten some freebies over the years, and that's people who are fleeing from Cuba have occasionally gotten some gifts or I guess some benefits. But in general, most immigrants that come here without documentation, if let's say they have a fake social security card, well, they're paying into Social Security and they will never see that money come back. So it's the opposite of the myth of people getting benefits for free. So thank you for that perspective, Frank. I appreciate that. Before we hear more sound, let's go now to Kevin in Bradenton, who's been holding a while. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Sean. Great show, man. I just wanted to piggyback on what some of the other callers have said about the way that this could be solved in an instant. You know, I don't understand why there's no mention by Mr. Lee or any of these people that say they want comprehensive immigration reform, but they don't ever mention anything about the employers being held accountable for the hiring of these people. And even though these people are legal, the way that they're being demonized and the employers are let off the hook, I've never heard any of our elected officials, maybe you can enlighten me on this, has anyone ever mentioned anything about making employers accountable for, you know, actually holding their feet to the fire instead of, you know, I don't know what they do to them when they find this going on, but there's got to be some kind of a recourse for justice somewhere along the line.
That might be what Senator Lee was getting at when he was criticizing his colleagues for not supporting E-Verify. And I hope I'm getting that correctly. I was listening to it in passing again, and I think that's what he was saying. You know, how come we haven't passed E-Verify? And I don't know if it's like a...
That's the case, then he's gained I got a whole new respect for him, you know? I mean, I hope you're right on that.
I'll post this later on our website, and you can listen back again in the video, the whole video I'll put of the whole debate, but that's my recollection of what he was saying. And I don't think that there's any penalties there necessarily, but it's more of just a letting people know whether someone is or is not documented before they hire them. And so a lot of our callers have pointed that out as well. So I'm glad you pointed that out. I think that the employers have responsibility here as well, as I've mentioned earlier.
But they never get vilified. You know what I mean? They are always let off the hook. And we know here in Tampa Bay, some of the conditions, you know, the way that they would have the people living in squalor and charging them, you know, outrageous rents and stuff. And those were the employers. So maybe people like Tony and Brett, who, you know, seem to not understand that that it's not always just the people that are working that are part of the problem.
All right, Kevin, thanks so much for that call. If you'd like to weigh in, the number is 813-239-9663. It's 12:55 in the afternoon. You're listening to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa and WMNF.org. And you might be listening on the WMNF smartphone app. David in St. Petersburg, what would you like to say?
Hey, yeah, I just to echo what's been said, I mean, it's clear that senators aren't voting for this because they have all had Guatemalan nannies. And if we put the employers in jail, the problem would stop almost immediately. You don't need ICE rounding up people if you jail and fine heavily the employers. And it's simple. Then they will either raise wages and hire Americans, or they'll realize that they have a true need for immigrants who will do this labor. So, yeah, jail the employers. No need to deport and jail the immigrants.
Thank you for that perspective, David. I appreciate that. I think at least maybe fines for employers who break the law, that might work. So I'm looking at these texts here. I want to read a couple of texts before we go back to the phone. And some of them are hard to read. I apologize for that. But I believe this one, 813 writes, I believe it was Reagan who lifted any responsibility off employers' backs so they're not held responsible legally for any hiring illegal undocumented immigrants. So thank you for that 813 message. And here's another 813 that says, I agree with your previous caller, Kevin. Employers do need to be held accountable. But look at the underlying factors that are causing them to hire these undocumented immigrants. Americans don't want to do the work, so they pay them to pay them a decent wage, offer some benefits, but that's going to take money out of the farmer's pocket in his expenses. So there's a bunch of underlying causes that come back to the reasoning for using undocumented immigrants for those jobs. However, I still agree with the fact that employers need to be held accountable for hiring undocumented immigrants because they're saving money, but ultimately the damage is being done worse than the money that's being saved traveling here. This time I'm finally done. So that's a long text message. It sounds like voice to text from the 813 area code. So thank you for that. And we have time for a couple more phone calls. William's been holding a long time. William in Tampa, what would you like to say?
What I'd like to say is make a comment that on something one of the earlier callers said about it doesn't matter on which side of the border a person is born. The piece of land on which you were born doesn't make them a citizen of this country. He's ignorant of the codes that concern citizenship. It's a matter of sovereignty. The laws of the United States clearly state that if an individual is born in this country, they do have U.S. citizenship. Now, if the parents want to apply to become resident aliens, or even if they want to go through the long process of becoming U.S. citizens, that's something that the parents have to endure. But as far as the child is concerned, that child is, in fact, a citizen of this country if they are born, quote-unquote, on this side of the border. You know, it's not as though this country is completely full. There's no land. There aren't any job opportunities or anything like that. So this person, before he opens his mouth and makes a statement that's based on fear and not fact, he needs to shut up. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, John.
William, thanks for that call, and let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. Carlos in Tampa, you've been holding a while, but is there a way for you to make it really quick?
Yeah, very quick. Look, it's not about the laws. The system, capitalism system, do you want to use those people just like merchandise? Use them, take advantage of them as much as you can, and then they are disposable. Then when you don't need them, you throw them out. There is no law, there is nothing. That's what they want. They want them, everything to be exactly the way it is right now. Nothing legal. We can use them, take advantage of them. We don't want them, throw them out, bring the another one, and keep going on and on and on, and that's it. Thank you, sir. Bye.
Carlos, thank you so much for that call. 813-239-9. Oh, I'm giving out the number and it's the end of the show. What am I doing? All right. Well, I want to thank everyone who called in. And if you still would like to have your thoughts known, you can leave us a voicemail. You can call me at 813-238-8001, extension 114, and I will play your message next show. You can also join the conversation online at wmnf.org/news or Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. And I want to thank our engineers, Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for Executive Session with John Gilmore. That's coming up after NPR headlines on 88.5 FM. WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening.